And now it is my great pleasure to introduce tonight the main event, the speaker, DL from New York.
Lucky said you guys wanted to see me, so you can't see me behind that podium, because I gotcha. I'm DL and I'm an alcoholic. You know, I used to say all kinds of things that I was, addict, alcoholic, and then somebody said to me one day, saying you're an addict and an alcoholic is like saying you're from Los Angeles, California. You don't need to say California. Right? Like, because I came in and I didn't think that pot was a problem. The pills that I was taking weren't a problem. It was the cocaine and the heroin. Right? So, you guys all look really beautiful tonight. I was really pissed when I got the email about the florals. I live in the East Village. I'm not floral. My florist made a boutonniere for me and my sponsee who flew in from LA to hear me and to be present. The refrigerator in my room here froze them, and it was a white boutonniere, and it was brown today, so I didn't wear it, but so you know, shit happens, right? So but I've had an amazing day, and it started with the workshop with Kathleen, and she did a meditation that a woman who saw me when I was newly sober and didn't think much of myself, but she thought I was really gifted and talented and celebrated me by passing me to all of her friends. And she died of a brain aneurysm 2 years ago, suddenly. And in that room today, she came to me, and Kathleen helped me put her inside of me, right? Because that's what we do. We're full of, I don't know if anybody, I'm sure a lot of you have done that workshop, but she's really gifted at helping you to find a space to have a little more freedom, because we're constricted, defended, you know, Cut and Run was my middle name. Anyways, I'm gonna give you like the stats and then we'll see what happens, okay? Because I'm over 60 and I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was in 1985. Okay? I'm not sober that long. And it took me a year and a half of going to meetings after my first detox to get a year. And then I got 4 years, and I got loaded. And then I stayed out for 2.5 years, and then I got sober again. It took me a year and a half of sitting in meetings and going to, I could write the Zagat Guide for the best detoxes in Los Angeles, because I just couldn't get it again. I was too scared, too frightened, and full of too much shame. Because the shit that happened after I had already been sober was worse than the shit that happened when I was, you know, a teenager, right? Anyways, so which sobriety was I on? The second or the third? Yeah. So then, during that year and a half, I was in the Friendly House, Beverly Hills Medical Center, Santa Monica, they had a detox in Marina Del Rey. There's a lot more there now. LA is popping with rehabs. Anyways, but I couldn't get it out there, and it wasn't because of LA, it was because of me. And so, yeah, so I got sober again and relapsed again after 4 years. So I've had four and a half years, and now I have almost 27. But I was that chick that you rolled your eyes at because I was loaded in the room. Why the fuck is she here? She's loaded. Can you smell alcohol? Well, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, honey. So don't ever roll your eyes at someone who's in the room and doesn't have a fucking day. Because then they could be your speaker at Floral Spring Clearance. Thank you for today. So let's get back to my day, right? So I had this little angel come in and come inside me, and then I met Chris yesterday, and I want to do that. And he's like, but you're the speaker. Maybe you should come tomorrow. And I was like, really? I want to come today. And, so I went, and, I have a low back issue because I had a really long career of physical work. And I laid down on that floor, and I could feel that it was going to seize on me. And they got me tablecloths, and I stayed in the breath work, right? You guys helped me. And I asked, can I do it on my side? And they preferred that I stayed on my back. So I stayed on my back, but I rolled my legs up. And boy, you people who were there today, bless you all. The power in that room. The vulnerability. It's here tonight too, right? It's what we give to each other. It's like, that's why when I say don't roll your eyes at that newcomer, because the shame that we have inside of us that we don't show anybody, like the most arrogant fucking person in the room is the most scared, right? You're judging my ass? Go fuck yourself. So thank you. So I really had an experience, and then I went and rested, and then I came here, and everybody's asking me, are you excited? Oh, I have such a story, and I just like, I have like three sober stories, and then I have like growing up and starting drinking when I was 11, right? I never met my biological, so here's where I know the games began, right? Never met my biological father. My mother was from, her father was a conservative Jew, and he was the head of radiology at Stanford Hospital, okay? And so she married, she got pregnant at 18 with a Scottish-Irish guy. So I think that's where the alcoholism came from, maybe, never met the guy, still haven't to this day. Second grade, I get bullied. Fourth grade, I get sexually assaulted in a ball closet. These things kept happening. So when I was 11, we moved from Palo Alto, California to Massachusetts. And there were kids who were being teased, and they looked like me. I was a little like, kind of, I had braids. Braids and bangs, and I was a nerdy kid. My mom dressed us in Goodwill clothing because she worked really hard but didn't have any money. And, you know, so I saw the cool kids, and by 11 I was smoking pot. By 13 I was giving blowjobs to 35-year-old guys. Right? Because I never had a daddy. And so I figured out where the power was. The power was in the sex. Drugs, sex. Drugs, sex. But I didn't, you know, and I liked it because I figured out how to do it well at 13. And my mother wasn't watching, so she didn't know. And the reason why Kathleen rocked me so much today was because it really is in those moments when some parent should be watching what you're doing. Instead, I was running around Boston with, like, rock and rollers and getting in the Rat-Skeller and cocktail waitressing at 16 at you know, the Beacon Hill Pub. And my aunt was giving me, you know, like, Dilaudid. I mean, like, I was just, like, a garbage head by the time I was 16, 17. And my mom was smart and educated. But here's where she missed it. Excuse me. I had a borderline schizophrenic sister that was diagnosed when she was 13, and she had abused me my whole life. I didn't know any different. It was just her and I. We were the only ones home. So my mom, who's single my whole life, marries a guy who's a professor at UMass, right? And so all of a sudden, I get to go to college, but I don't have the grades. I barely had the diploma. They let me walk across the stage. But so I get to go because I have this last name now where, you know, they got to let the professor's daughter in, right? So I go to UMass. My first week there, I meet the coke dealer who flies in from L.A. I never went to class. 6 weeks later, I moved to Los Angeles with the coke dealer. 18 years old, Venice Beach. I just revisited that place because my sponsee lives in Venice now. And, you know, I went out there and I couldn't believe, like, you know, and what happened was is he had this little flat two-bedroom apartment 4 blocks from the beach. I was 19, the drinking age was 21, and so he would go out drinking with his friends and leave me at home. And I got really mad one night, and I found the coke. It was in the vacuum cleaner. I mean, you know, I did probably an ounce and a half. And he came home, I'm on the ceiling, and he beat the shit out of me. And because I had never been hit before, because, I mean, you know, like, there was no man in my house, and then the only men I knew were, you know, the ones I was having fun with. Oh, and I also started sleeping with girls when I was 16. Mm-hmm. That was my favorite. But they didn't talk about it that, you know, we were doing like Quaaludes and making out in bathrooms and, you know, it was the 70s, you know. Some of you know. Now I'm married to a hetero man, and it's, you know, wild. Like, you know, you fall in love with who you fall in love with. It doesn't fucking matter, right? Anyways, I think I'm bouncing all over the place, but I got time, right? So he beat me up, and I took my suitcase, and I sat on the porch of that condo. And the girl who lived across the way saw me sitting out there crying with a black eye. She pulled me in her apartment. Her name was Sherry. And Sherry was a singer, She had a two bedroom with a garage, and it was $495. She invited me to live with her. Billy lived across the way. So I moved right in. And about 2 months later, she got a record deal in London, and I got the apartment. And I lived there for 15 years. And I was a cocktail waitress and one time I didn't come home for like 4 days, and I couldn't pay the $495, so I got another waitress to move in with me. And I would disappear, and I would do these crazy 5-day coke things with people, lots of people. And she called my mother. And she said, I think your daughter has a problem. So my mother called a shrink. I went to a psychiatrist, coked out of my mind, and you know, what's the matter? You know, like I never went to him sober. It was like 3 weeks, and then he called my mother and he said, I can't help her, she needs a rehab. She's a drug addict. So my parents at the time, I had a mother and a stepfather, he wasn't my father at the time, flew me back. They lived on Martha's Vineyard. So they flew me to Martha's Vineyard and did one of those professional interventions. And I got off the airplane, I had rainbow colored hair, it was like spiked here. And like my mom didn't recognize me. I thought it was so fucking funny. I walked by her. I'm like, ha ha, you didn't see me. And you know, like she didn't recognize me because I didn't look like me. I had really gone way out there. And they took me up to the island, and the family's there, everyone's talking to me. And the interventionist gives me this choice. I can either go to McLean's, and they had this brochure, and the girl had a tear coming down and said we could help. And I remember McLean's because my schizophrenic sister had been in McLean's when she was 13, right? Like that was a known mental institution in Massachusetts. And the other place was St. John's Chemical Dependency Center in sunny Santa Monica. And I was living in Santa Monica, or Venice. But so I went to the St. John's. Anyways, when I checked in there, I was 4 months pregnant, didn't know it, had a miscarriage. On my first day pass, I slept with Ben, who was, down the hall. I mean, I had a cousin named Zippy who would come and visit me, and we would smoke pot and walk around this rubber track. Like, they didn't urine test me. This was 1984. So I get out of there, and what I did here, I did love the stories, but I didn't want to not smoke pot, and I didn't want to not drink. But I didn't really want to do heroin and cocaine and all that, all the stuff that really got me into trouble and got me more hurt. And so I started going to this meeting, and I got a commitment at a CA meeting on Venice Boulevard, and I was the cookie girl. This guy named Brett was the coffee boy. Boy, was he cute. He was the cutest guy I think I had ever seen. And so we would set our stuff up, and sometimes I was high, and sometimes I was counting days, whatever. We'd go outside and smoke cigarettes, and he would flirt with me, and I said to him, after about 2 months of this, I said, why do you flirt with me but you won't take me out? And he says, because you're not sober. And my sponsor said, I can't take you out. And I said, well, how many days do I got to get the date? And he said 90. Yeah, it was the 80s, honey. So I got my 90 days, and I wore my raspberry-colored leather outfit to that meeting, and I paraded myself up to that podium. I got my chip, and I went and dropped it in his lap. And we went on a date that night. And the next day, he moved into my two-bedroom apartment with me. And we had a four-year relationship. So remember my stats, guys? So what do you think Brett was? Yeah, and he was a musician, and he started to get some recognition, and I would go to these shows, and I would see these girls screaming, "Oh, Brett!" And I was convinced he was cheating on me, and I didn't feel good about myself because I really didn't do a thorough four-step. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. It says, those who cannot recover are incapable of being honest with themselves, right? I was, at that point in my life, incapable of being honest with myself, but I didn't know it. I didn't figure that out until this sobriety. So I thought Brett was cheating on me. So I cheated on him. Right? Get him first. And how I did that was, I had this medical problem, and at the time I was also like a certified alcoholism counselor. I had done, you know, I came from an educated family. I didn't know what to do. I was a cocktail waitress, so I went to KDAC at UCLA. I was the intervention person at the Sentinella Hospital, and so I had some medical emergency, and the emergency room doctor was hot. And so Brett had a show that night, and he says to the emergency room doctor, "Do I need to hang out and wait for her?" He said, "Well, I think I'm going to admit her, so if you need to leave, go." I had an affair with that man for 8 years. He was married. I stayed with Brett for a year during that time. And you want to talk about shame, crawling back in bed with a sober man that I was wearing an engagement ring, and then but going to the Hilton on near LAX during the day, and then getting back in bed and being sober. So they say, you know, also it says in the book that if you have these secrets and you're living this double life, you know, like how are you gonna put your head on the pillow at night? Sleep. So eventually I used. Bill was a doctor, so Bill would detox me, and I would call him and go, "This is your, you know, you did the, you know," like, I mean, I was so crazy. And during one of those relapses, I went to massage school. Who knows what's coming next? And the married doctor paid for the massage school, bought the massage table. So what do you think he got? Lots of massages. And I learned a new trade. And then I couldn't get sober again. And I was a really talented massage therapist, right? But I didn't, I mean, I knew I had good hands. And I don't mean in that way, though, actually. I really don't. What I mean is that, like, I was cocktail waitressing, and this woman that I was kind of hanging out with also, she was the manager, and I would give her little shoulder massages, and she said, "You have great hands, you should go to school." So I did. I mean, I had the wildest clients when I was loaded, right? And then I got sober, and then, I hate to say this, but you know, not everybody's well in AA, and they found out I was a massage therapist doing funny stuff, and you know, I had some of those clients too, and that ain't so cool. Right? There's a lot of not cool people. We're not cool when we're defended and we're fucking hurt from all of our trauma. We hurt people. Hurt people hurt people. I never thought I was going to get sober and stay sober. I really never thought I could get it. I never thought I could forgive myself for the way that I was or who I was or how I had lived. I really didn't think I was going to get it. So So I'm doing the massages. In that year and a half that I'm sitting in the rooms loaded, my family puts me in yet another place. I go to the Friendly House, which is, you know, the Friendly House, Peggy. She died. Yeah. Anyways. She helped a lot of people. She helped me. She, every time I would tell her I was leaving, she'd go, I'm going to call your mother. And I lived there for a year, and I was a massage therapist with private clients, right? You know what they are, right? And I get there, and you have to have a job because it's like one of those recovery homes, right? So I have to get a job, and I'm like, I'm not going to work in a coffee shop. I'm making like a couple hundred bucks an hour. Like, no. And she's like, go get a job. So I go to this place called the Massage Therapy Center, which used to be on Sawtell Boulevard. And this guy owns the place. He's an Israeli guy. And apparently he only hires like two therapists a year. This is how I found out I was really talented. You know, I'm sitting in this auditorium and he's telling me how fabulous his therapy center is and how much we all want to work there. And I'm like, rolling my eyes, because I need a job now for tomorrow, and it's an interview process of 6 months. And so I walk out the door before he's done, and his wife is making the appointments, and she says, do you want to make an appointment for an audition? And I went, no, I kind of need a job right away. She goes, well, you could be the first audition. So I went back the next day and auditioned for this guy. And he got off the table and he said to me, this has only happened twice in my career of doing this, and he'd been doing it for 25 years, where heat came out of somebody's hands. He goes, you're a real healer. Now I'm a fucking junkie living in a rehab. And I need a day pass to go back to work. But he hires me on the spot. So, you know, and I had never, I hadn't worked anywhere. I'd always worked private. So now I'm like, they're booking me like 5 hours out, and they're like, you know, I had the longest do not do list of any therapist there because I just hated certain kinds of people. And anyways. But I still had all the side shit happening. So what do you think happens, right? I get out of Friendly House. I pick a sponsor I'm afraid of. Don't pick a sponsor you're afraid of. Pick a sponsor who doesn't judge you. Pick a sponsor you can tell the truth to. You don't gotta change today. Any principle I'm living by took me years, right? So I start doing the side gig again in this sobriety, and I'm pouring drinks for clients, thinking it's okay, right? Still sleeping with the married doctor. I could walk into an AA room in Los Angeles, and there would be at least six boys I had slept with. I didn't feel good about myself. So one day I was walking down the street in LA because my car was in the shop because no one walks in LA. And a car rolls into the crosswalk and I flung myself on it. And the next thing you knew, I was in the emergency room where my married doctor worked, and he shot me in the ass with Demerol, and boom, 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 I was off and running. So I flew to my family's house on Martha's Vineyard with three different bottles of Percodans and what have you, and I sat in the Alcoholics Anonymous meetings that summer doing this, telling them I was taking my meds as prescribed. And the other cute guy, there's always a cute guy. So I started a little something that summer, and then I left and went back to L.A. That guy relapsed, called me and said, "Oh, honey, I drank." And I said, "Oh, yeah, I'm using again, too." And he said, "Honey, you were using all summer." And I said, "Oh." He says, "You're going to die out there in L.A." And I said, and I heard, "Get on, like, I love you, come back." So I got on a plane, packed up my apartment in L.A., had Raul flatbed my Mercedes to Martha's fucking Vineyard in October 17, 1997, and I haven't found it necessary to take another drink since then. I had no idea when I got on that plane that I would never drink again, you know? And I didn't want to live on Martha's Vineyard. My schizophrenic borderline sister, who still drank, lived there, okay? My parents lived there, and this guy picked me up from the airport, and he drove me up to my mother's house, and I said, "Where are you taking me? I didn't come here to be with my mother." If any of you know anything about New England back then, they really didn't have winter residence. They do now, because back then we didn't have the computer. You couldn't do your work from your home the way that you can now. Like, there wasn't the internet the way it was. And so it was just locals. And so I walk into the Monday night chill mark meeting, and there's like, you know, eight guys. Two of them are fishermen. Three of them are like, you know, house builders. One woman, you could barely tell she was a woman. It was just like not the crowd that I had been seeing in the summer, right? And I thought, how am I going to get sober here if I couldn't get sober in L.A.? Everybody thinks L.A. has the best meetings. Wrong. They're in New York. Anyways, during one of my relapses, the man that my mother had married, who died a few years ago, became my father. When I was on a heroin run in Los Angeles, it came to me after like 3 days of not sleeping that the reason I couldn't get and stay sober was because I didn't have a daddy. And I called that man and I said, "Will you adopt me?" I took his last name. And I called him my papa, and he never, like, they would fly out and put me in rehabs. I mean, like, he just knew one day I was going to be a gem. Anyhow, so I started my recovery there, and I picked a sponsor that, was highly unlikely for me. Like, we were very different. She seemed a little asexual, and she would look at me with these eyes, and she would go, "Okay, you're gonna do this." And I'd be like, "Okay." And, you know, like, I had to meet her every Monday night at the same time, call her at the same time, come with my work. And, I started my little summer business that summer on Martha's Vineyard. And, because I had that talent that guy had, I was working on the 1% the first summer of my sobriety in Martha's Vineyard. But I didn't want to be an island girl and live there. So at the end of the summer, when the guy, of course, the relationship fell apart, this lady says to me, who, like, she was the president of, like, the largest cosmetic company, said to me, "You know, you're very talented. I don't picture you staying here." And I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, Well, I know lots of people who would like to meet you in New York. So 2 days before I was to celebrate 1 year of sobriety, I moved to New York City. And I had committed in that inventory that I was working on. Well, I didn't commit at this point, but I had stopped doing the other work in my business, which was hard because I didn't trust my talent, right? I didn't trust my gift. I didn't think I was going to be okay. So I moved to New York 2 days before I'm to celebrate a year. I'm in this apartment on Hudson and Grove that a client of mine gave me for like 6 weeks to sublet. And the first time I'm like going up to see that client up on Park Ave, I'm in the cab and it's raining and I have my massage table and I'm like, what the fuck did I just do? I'm looking at the lights of New York City and I couldn't believe that like this girl who had been in LA and couldn't get sober and I had this protected year on Martha's Vineyard and now I'm in New York City where you know you can have everything, right? And that's the other scary thing is I couldn't stay sober in LA because I was a chameleon. I was like, I'd go to Beverly Hills and tell you I had 5 days. I'd go to Venice and tell you I had 20. You know, like I was just, you know, a liar. So I moved to New York and I'm in the middle of my inventory and I insist on bringing my car because I love to drive. And so I have to do my inventory every day, so you have to move the fucking car every day in New York. And so I'd bring the inventory out and do my inventory during my alternate side street parking. And then I'd drive back to Martha's Vineyard and I'd read her the inventory. And it was the first time in all the years I had been here where I was ever completely honest with anybody. And it took me like 18 hours to read it. And she wrote on her bulletin board, and it's still there. This woman still sponsors me. She was a therapist, and she had so many gifts. But you know, we were just so different. And she wrote, "Horrors do recover," not whores, but horrors, like horror. And it's still there. It still says that we recover. We can recover. So I started my business in New York City, and within 2 years, I was like working on people backstage at Madison Square Garden. I was getting on people's planes. I was all of a sudden being celebrated for this gift that I had. And I wasn't touching anybody, but it would happen. And I would have to make a choice, right? What am I gonna do? And you know, when Lucky called me and asked me if I wanted to come and do this thing, did I have a tape? I did not have a tape. And I don't always give this many details. But CMA and the pain that we go through, I mean, I wasn't a crystal meth, but I was a cocaine, heroin, crackhead. You know? So I'm giving you these details because they're important, because we hold this stuff in and we don't let anybody really help us. And we think things are okay, but then all of a sudden you don't know why you're loaded. So I got, I just did a lot of work. I got outside help. I still have the same therapist. I went to the Karen Foundation. I did that core work, my therapist, when I walked into his office, he says to me, so what do you want to work on? I said, I really want to have relationships with you. I don't know what a relationship is. I don't know what intimacy is. And, you know, to this day, I have a relationship with that person. He's been my therapist for 24 years. I'm married to a man. It'll be 7 years. There was nothing smooth about it. When I went out, when I had 2 years sober in New York, here's the other thing about New York, men walk everywhere, right? So now I'm not picking them up the way I did in LA. Now they're on the train, they're walking down the street, they're smiling at you. You know, they're everywhere, and I'm in a lot of trouble. And she said, but I'm not doing it in my business. And she says to me, I tell her, like, and then it turned into a different kind of obsession. It was like, if I had a great night with you, I became obsessed. And I would say to my sponsor, but we had such a great connection. And she'd say to me, you have a connection with everyone, DL. You're in trouble. And she said, I'm not going to sponsor you unless you take a look at this area. The man thing is going to kill you. That's when I went to the Karen Foundation. I got the therapist. I was celibate for 2 years. I see half of you just shut me out. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, a year at a time, I got more comfortable with who I was. I got, I've done the work in so many different ways, and it's amazing, you know. And I never thought I would get past 5 years. You know, I had the 4. You know, I could get sober, but I couldn't get comfortable. So, you know, when I had 10 years of sobriety, I thought I was flying high. I was so, like, successful. I was kind of like the it body worker in New York City. And I showed up at work one day, and my client was lying face down, found him deceased. Had to give him CPR. There I am, 10 years sober, and like the youngest, hottest guy dead in front of me. It was, I actually don't even know how to really talk about this because I've never had the time to in the rooms in this, in a manner of which where I don't have the shame or the fear or the public attention anymore. It was a long time ago. Let me tell you something. You walk into something like that, you walk out the door, and 300 people take your fucking picture, and then you go to the police station, and they want to book you because they don't know how you participated. This guy named Jimmy King from Boston calls me up. He saw it on the news before it was public, or before I knew it was public. He said, "Where are you, honey?" I never told, one of the things that this therapist helped me with, because I thought I was special because I was doing all these celebrities and one percenters, right? I thought, oh, see, I'm talented, I'm okay. I got my self-esteem by who called me. My therapist said to me, do you think it matters whether you massage that person before they went on stage at Madison Square Garden or the other person that you did the other night? I said, yes, I do. Because at that point, I didn't have the esteem to know that it didn't matter, right? So this incident happens, and all of a sudden, I'm like the fucking story. And I'm in AA, and no one ever knew that that was my clientele or what I even did for a living. Because I didn't talk about it, because it wasn't AA. It was a sideways thing. And so, you know, I almost drank. The IRS went after me. I needed a criminal lawyer. I was in Italy, and I almost drank, and I was so angry at AA because there were so many people that, you know, thought maybe I was a little crazy before, and all of a sudden they wanted to fucking talk to me. People wanted to be my friend. Get away. You know, I learned. And so, and the other reason why I decided to talk about this tonight is there's this huge thing going on in social media, you know, like what you see is not real. You know, what you feel in a room with this man here who does breath work is real. The laughter we had tonight is real. So I'm still having problems in relationships, right? I'm attracting the same guy over and over and over and over again. 6 month relationship, 3 month relationship, whatever. When I'm so I get through that situation and I realize I want true intimacy. That was scary. I had to rejoin AA, and that guy who called me on the phone while I was in the police station became my sponsor and took me through the big book again. And, you know, and it took a lot of years to kind of unravel that and be okay with it. You know, I had a lot of trauma around it, thought it was my fault, should have got there earlier, whatever. But it's not about what happened, it's the process of me reclaiming myself through a situation and saying my sobriety is the most important thing right here, right now. And moving forward and digging even deeper, right? And so my sponsor had always wanted me to do this workshop on relationships, and I thought it was corny. Because I was like, I don't really want to be married. I just want someone to really love me and just be able to see the ugly and not run. So I did her little workshop. And in it, she made me sign up for like Match.com and, you know, whatever. By the time I got home, this girl had written me and asked me if she could fix me up with this guy who was a widower. And I'm married to him now, and I mean, literally 2 days after the workshop, I had this date. And she knew him because he had a home on Martha's Vineyard, and his wife died. And she said to me when I was going on the date, she said, because she thought he reminded her of my father, who at the time was still alive. She said, don't judge him by his looks. Just go and talk to him. And so I thought, oh, he's going to be fucking ugly. He was so handsome and so well-dressed, I thought. And we had a great time. And he wanted to kiss me. And I had been learning how to get intimacy, like maybe I shouldn't kiss him yet, right? I kissed him. And then I had to go work, and he said, can I Uber you home? Nobody had Ubered me home ever. And he Ubered me home, and then I'm at my clients, and he said, I didn't actually feed you. And so he said, would you like to join me for dinner? So I called my, you know, my friend and my sponsor, and I said, I think he just wants to fuck me. And they said, well, go to dinner, but don't go in his apartment. So it's been a really long process. He had three children and five grandchildren. They were not happy about my entrance to their family. It was really painful. So, like, if you think you get the dream, right, you still gotta do more work. Right? And I'm going to share, you know, like, they were really mean to me. And then the pandemic happened, and they weren't talking to me. He took me to City Hall and married me. All right? And we moved into, you know, I mean, we were, like, flying all over. He wasn't in AA, and, you know, he was, like, just so yummy. And then the pandemic happened, and he stopped going to work. I almost lost the marriage. I didn't know how to deal with someone 24/7, and the AA came in the home. And what do we do when we get frightened? I have 20 whatever years of sobriety, and I told them, don't fucking talk to me. I haven't had my coffee yet. I'm on 6 AA meetings a day. Don't come in the room, I'm sharing. So I just want to share this because I have a minute left, but I really didn't think I could come back from that. But he stayed for the ugly. Pick someone who really can stay for the ugly. Because I was ugly. But he wasn't, well, anyway, we're not. Like a few of you said good morning to me this morning when I came out of my room to get a cup of coffee, and I was like. Anyways, I just want to share the family situation. Like, I'm a grandma of five. Last week, we went to Fort Lauderdale. We rented a big house. And, like, they love to play with me. And, they're all different ages. And some of them are, one of them is trying to figure out who they are. And, you know, it's just so fabulous that that it's come full circle. But it's taken a lot of therapy and a lot of me keeping my mouth shut. Next week, the daughter, I'm going to stop with this, the daughter is having a surgery. Now, this woman wouldn't look at me. So I'm part of the family. I don't know if they really actually like me, but they know I'm part of the package. Their dad loves me, and that's it. I am the queen. Anyway, so my wish for all of you is to find your own truth, because that was mine. Love you all. Thank you.